Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's long-standing ban against providing public dollars to religious institutions could come a tumbling down if voters say yes to the repeal.
Should the taxpayers be forced to send their money to a religious group preferred by someone else? Because that's what this amendment, this proposal would do.
Also tonight, in November, Floridians will be voting yes or no on the issue of felons regaining their voting rights, which has prompted a similar proposal to be withdrawn.
We don't need two proposals on the ballot. We need one proposal so that people can make a decision.
We'll also look at a measure that's giving heartburn to advocates of collective bargaining and find out why some University of Florida Gators were a bit uncomfortable at today's meeting of the Capitol Tiger Bay Club. It's the end of week three in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Florida voters could be asked to reconsider a long-standing ban on public funding to religious organizations. The proposal passed a key education committee of the Florida Constitution Revision Commission today. Len Hatter explains what the Blaine Amendment is and its impact on education in the state.
First, a quick history lesson. The so-called Blaine Amendments get their name from former U.S. House Speaker James Blaine. In 1875, he proposed an amendment to the U.S. Constitution stopping states from funding religious organizations. The amendment failed, but a majority of states have similar language in their constitutions. Florida's Blaine Amendment set up a barrier to using public dollars to directly or indirectly fund religious groups. A lower court ruling against former Governor Jeb Bush's school voucher program cited the prohibition in its decision. The Florida Supreme Court later struck down the program as well, but for different reasons. It's a decision that has stuck in the craw of school choice supporters at a time when many public school alternatives, like private school, are religious in nature or affiliated with religious groups. Fast forward to 2012, when the state's Republican-led legislature put an effort to repeal Blaine before voters. It failed. Now the Constitution Revision Commission wants to try again. Member Roberto Martinez says he's not a religious person, has no agenda, but thinks the language is unfair.
But I'm also a strong proponent of not putting disabilities or a bar based upon the status of a person because they happen to be a religious person or a religious institution. I think that the Free Exercise Clause requires that we not place that disability on that entity based upon its status.
Furthermore, Martinez argues the amendment is unnecessary because the U.S. Constitution already has a similar prohibition in the First Amendment.
If the legislature approves a program that might benefit a school that is a religious school or a religious organization, that'll be challenged. And if it doesn't pass muster under the anti-establishment clause of the First Amendment, then it'll be stricken as unconstitutional. We're not touching that.
The prohibition on public funds to religious entities is inconsistent, says Commissioner Erica Donalds. She argues the state's voluntary pre-kindergarten program has many religious providers, and the state has partnered with faith-based groups and paid money to them, everything from hospitals to prison to adoption facilitators.
You know, we know many areas in which, as Commissioner Stemberger mentioned, the partnership between faith-based organizations and the state come together for the public good and not to promote that religion. And if this were consistently applied, if it were to be left on principle, if it were right, that none of those things would be able to take place and that our state would be less rich because of that.
But Blaine has its supporters, and the fight over whether it should stay or go is heated. Speaking on the side of keeping it is Arthenia Joyner, a Tampa Bay Democrat and former state senator.
But why should your freedom become my burden? Should the taxpayers of Florida be compelled to pay for your choice? Should the taxpayers be forced to send their money to a religious group preferred by someone else? because that's what this amendment, this proposal would do.
And Winter Garden resident Joseph Richardson drove 4 hours to attend the meeting just to speak against repealing Blaine.
The coercive taxing power of the government should not be wielded to oblige Muslims to bankroll temples and yeshivas, or to compel Jews to subsidize Christian churches and Catholic schools, or to force Christians to fund mosques and madrasas. And as a non-believer, I should not be forced to fund any of the above.
But Commissioner John Stemberger, who heads the conservative Florida Family Policy Council, argues faith is a public good, and the work religious-based organizations do contributes to society in ways that governments can't. In Florida, amendment proposals must be approved by 60% of Florida voters in order to be added to the state constitution. And in 2012, the repeal effort failed with less than 50% support. But Martinez, the amendment sponsor, says times are changing, and he thinks it's about time to give an effort to repeal Blaine another go. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
The journey for Florida felons to regain their right to vote recently overcame its largest hurdle as the Grassroots Citizens Initiative received enough signatures to place the issue on the 2018 ballot. This has prompted a similar proposal to be withdrawn in order to avoid confusion at the polls, as we hear from Andrew Quintana.
The fight for Florida felons to receive the right to vote just became a little easier. Former Senate Democratic leaders Arthenia Joyner and Chris Smith withdrew their proposal from the Constitution Revisions Commission following the success of the citizens-led ballot initiative earlier this week.
Our decision today, Senator Smith and mine, to withdraw our proposal is made knowing that the question will indeed appear on the November ballot and that the people of Florida will finally have the opportunity to decide the question for themselves.
This November, Florida voters will have the opportunity to decide whether felons should regain the right to vote, the final step in what has been a year-long battle for the Citizens Initiative. It recently received the 766,200 signatures needed to place the issue on Florida's 2018 ballot, leaving no room for Joyner and Smith's plan. Proposal 7 asked for felons to have their voting rights restored once they completed their sentencing terms, mirroring the citizens-led ballot initiative very closely. To avoid confusion at the polls and creating a conflict of interest, Smith says, it only makes sense to withdraw, and urges others to do the same.
Well, I think the question is settled now. It's on the ballot. And I think all the others need to be withdrawn also, because the question is settled now. It's on the ballot. Floridians will go and vote in November. Yes or no.
There's only one other similar proposal still pending before the Constitution Revision Commission. That one specifies which felons can and can't regain the right to vote. Democratic Senator Daryl Rousson says he appreciates Joyner and Smith's withdrawal and will consider the request that he withdraws as more information comes in. The final hurdle now is having 60% of Floridians vote yes on 4. Smith does not think this will be an issue.
Well, I think you've seen people's attitudes have changed towards this through the years. For the mere fact that, you know, bills are moving through the House and the Senate now, for years, we couldn't even get them scheduled. So now you see that, you know, people's attitudes are changing, and we're very confident that over 60% will vote for this.
Joyner and Smith are also confident that this will reduce a lot of the power Florida Governor Rick Scott has on the process of felons regaining their voting rights. When Scott first took office, he and the rest of the cabinet, which makes up the Clemency Board, reversed the automatic restoration of felon voting rights upon the completion of their sentences.
But Governor Scott has sat like a king, you know, with a thumbs up and thumbs down, dealing with people's lives. You're having people travel from Miami-Dade, driving all the way up here to go through an entire process just to have Governor Scott arbitrarily say no and turn them away.
Joyner and Smith are now focusing their efforts on promoting Amendment 4. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Angie Quintana.
Still to come on Capitol Report, will new gambling legislation pass this session? At this point, leaders say it's anybody's guess.
dams could break at any moment in time, and all of a sudden you have everybody on the same page, and then at the same time, it's one of the hardest things that we ever try to accomplish.
Opponents of a so-called union-busting bill are none too happy with the Florida House for passing it.
Look, if someone's unhappy with their labor union, they can go to PERC today. They say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This doesn't seem to be broke. Why are we doing this?
And a former powerful opponent of a memorial honoring the memory of Florida's enslaved is now willing to throw his support behind the monument on the Capitol grounds.
I would like to honor people rather than being about the institution. But I think they've worked through a good explanation that that is their intent and that would be the content.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
With a proposed constitutional amendment looming that would require any new gambling to get approval from voters, Florida lawmakers are pushing a number of last-minute gambling changes. But Regan McCarthy reports whether those measures get final approval is a question even leaders seem unable to answer.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran says the chances of a gambling bill passing this year are somewhere between 1 and 99%.
Gaming is the one issue. If you said to me, hey, what's the likelihood that we're going to see a higher ed bill? I could say to you, I think that right now I'd say 85%. What's the likelihood we're going to see another K-12 bill out of the House? 85%. What's the likelihood you're going to see a gaming bill? It's one of those few issues where it's every single day it's either 1% or 99%.
Corcoran says he doesn't want to tell people a measure won't pass because he says there's always a possibility.
Dams could break at any moment in time, and all of a sudden you have everybody on the same page, and then at the same time, it's one of the hardest things that we ever try to accomplish as by the fact that we've had less than 1% success for the past, 7 years I've been here.
Corcoran points out lawmakers reached conference on the issue last year and is hopeful that can happen again. And it seems he's not the only one with that in mind. Several lawmakers have bills containing the compromise language members of the House and Senate hammered out together during the last legislative session. For example, Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young is behind a measure to clarify that fantasy sports do not constitute gambling.
So I felt that since that was the agreed upon language between the House and Senate last year, that it made sense to start there with the cleaner approach. And the companion to this is identical in the House, and it is moving in the House.
Young says her goal in sponsoring the measure is to ensure the 3 million Floridians who play fantasy sports aren't suddenly told they've been doing something illegal.
I don't think we want our friends and neighbors to be engaging, or said to be engaging in a criminal enterprise for engaging in a game of skill that they enjoy with their family and friends.
But Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee has some concerns. He says he'd like to ensure the language in any gambling legislation is written as tightly as possible to protect against any exploitation through loopholes. Lee says the state's gambling industry has some creative people.
You know, they've figured out a way to come up with an alter ego of a paramutual facility to serve as a straw man in a bank card game, and so they couldn't call it, so they didn't have to call it bank card games. You've got people reading the horse racing statutes in such a broad way as to have two horses that are about ready for the glue factory.
Despite those concerns, Young's bill is moving forward along with a number of other gambling proposals in the Florida legislature. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
While it's so far gone nowhere in the state Senate, a proposal critics are dubbing the union-busting bill has passed the Florida House. Sasha Cordner has more.
The so-called union-busting measure is by Longwood Republican Representative Scott Plakin. He says it's a rather simple bill.
First, it's about transparency. in that we'll be asking public sector unions to report how many of their members pay dues, along with a report that they already file each year that's already being done. Second is about democracy, as we'll be asking them to make sure that at least half their members are dues paying. Third, it's about accountability, in that we'll hold union officials accountable to their members, in that they, in some cases, will need to be more responsive to their members to earn their support, just like we need to do in this room. If they fail to comply with these simple measures towards transparency, democracy, and accountability, they'll simply have to recertify.
The measure doesn't have the backing of Democrats like Orlando Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith. He says it's a targeted effort to disband certain unions.
We already know who's going to be dramatically impacted by this bill. It's FEA, the teachers union, AFSCME, our government employees, and probably a few others. But who cares? Mission accomplished. Isn't that the point of this bill? Aren't they the real targets?
The measure does include a carve-out for public safety workers like law enforcement officers and firefighter unions. But Les Cantrell says not every public safety worker gets that carve-out. He represents the National Association of Government Employees, or NAGE.
NAGE currently represents in excess of 3,500 emergency medical technicians, or EMTs, and paramedics, and are not excluded from and would be directly impacted by this bill. When lives are on the line, we trust our EMTs to do the best in one of the most stressful and difficult professions in Florida. Having a collective bargaining agreement gives them a voice to negotiate for fair wages and for their work, and to ensure they have the best working conditions they need to do their job.
The proposal, heavily backed by Republican lawmakers, also doesn't have the backing of Brody Hughes. He's with the International Union of Police Associations. While his union is one of the groups carved out of the bill because of his members' public safety backgrounds, Hughes still opposes the measure.
This may be an oxymoron. I'm a Republican union president. I support the fact that we should have unions. And if the Republicans that are pushing this don't take the serious, that they're going to create problems throughout our state that we can't reverse.
Meanwhile, the measure is backed by conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity and pro-business groups like Florida Chamber of Commerce. Here's the Florida Chamber's Chris Emanuel.
The Florida Chamber of Commerce wants every Floridian to have a good wage. Our companies are some of the largest employers and some of the smallest employers. What we're talking about, though, is in the public sector. These public sector unions that are claiming to represent the entirety of a bargaining unit, but not being, in our view, appropriately representative of that bargaining unit. And we think it's bad governance to have such a small percent of people make decisions for such a large portion of the bargaining unit.
The Florida House passed the measure 65-41. Lawmakers appear to be fast-tracking the bill after only a single committee hearing. Meanwhile, its Senate companion bill, which is scheduled for three committee hearings, has not been heard. A similar bill passed the House last year but died in the Senate as well. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Friday's meeting of the Capitol Tiger Bay Club bore a marked resemblance to a Florida State University pep rally. The reason for all the garnet and gold hoopla, FSU President John Thrasher was the meeting's featured speaker. President Thrasher spent much of his talk extolling the various virtues of his own institution, but he was also quick to point out that even though some of the state's universities are regular opponents on the football field, they can also work together when the occasion calls for it.
Last November, I would tell you that I joined President Fox of the University of Florida, President Hitt of the University of Central Florida, and President Genshaf from the President of South Florida. And we went to Washington to do one thing, and that was to promote to national reporters and share the good news about higher education in the state of Florida.
Thrasher said those kinds of cooperative promotional efforts are bearing significant fruit.
Last spring, U.S. News and World Report named Florida the best state for higher education in the nation. And that's a testimony to a lot of things: great faculty, great students, the legislature empowering our universities to rise to excellent levels. Florida was ranked above the other 49 states because of, you know, top graduation rates, low debt at graduation, and relatively low tuition.
Thrasher says that last issue is a particular point of pride.
The average cost of earning a bachelor's degree in Florida is less than $15,000. Now, that's a lot of money, I grant you, but compared to other states, we are a great bargain for the quality of education that our students are getting in the state of Florida.
Thrasher mentioned the support of the state legislature. Besides his office in Florida State University's venerable Westcott Hall, the legislature is probably where he feels most at home. That's because he served there first in the House, including a stint as House Speaker, and then the state Senate from 1992 until 2014, when he was named FSU's 15th president. Thrasher says his positive relationship with lawmakers remains undiminished.
Senator Negron, President Negron yesterday, and Speaker Corcoran both addressed the Board of Governors, and they talked about the value of our university system in the state of Florida. And I was very pleased about that.
At the same time, Thrasher and his other university president colleagues are hoping that verbal support can be expressed in solid financial support as both chambers dive into the yearly budgeting exercise in the weeks to come. Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel, gets us up to speed on some other legislative happenings.
Week 3 of the 2018 legislative session coming to an end. Bills considered this week include House Bill 1099, Advanced Birthing Centers. Among other things, this bill provides for the issuance, renewal, denial, and revocation of licenses to establish advanced birthing centers by the Agency for Healthcare Administration. It passed healthcare appropriations and has one more committee stop. House Bill 1419 and Senate Bill 1048. This bill authorizes a church, a synagogue, or other religious institution to allow a concealed weapons or concealed firearms licensee to carry a firearm on the property of the church, synagogue, or religious institution for certain purposes. It passed Senate Judiciary and House Criminal Justice and has one more committee stop. House Bill 553 and Senate Bill 740, entitled Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Among other things, this bill transfers the authority for oyster harvesting licenses in Apalachicola Bay from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services to the City of Apalachicola. It also revises the permits for water vending machines. The bills passed House Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations and the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Each has one more committee stop before going to the floor. And finally, Senate Bill 1592, entitled Sales and Use Tax Exemptions for Electric Generators. This bill revises the sales tax exemption for certain items in agricultural use to include generators used on all farms. It also provides a sales tax exemption for the purchase of certain emergency electric energy equipment used at nursing homes and at assisted living facilities. After having passed the Senate Agriculture Committee, it will need to go through two more committees before being debated on the floor. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the state legislature is one major step closer to building a memorial recognizing enslaved Floridians. After facing resistance last year, Kate Payne reports the measure is moving in both chambers.
In the early days of Florida's statehood, nearly half of the population was enslaved. Florida's agriculture industry and its early state capitals were built on the backs of slaves. Now the legislature wants to memorialize the lives, deaths, and suffering of enslaved Floridians. Representative Keone McGee, a Cutler Bay Democrat, has been carrying the bill for 2 years.
The state of Florida, Cloth and House Bill 67, is prepared to show the world that a Florida slavery memorial should be placed between Jefferson and Monroe, flanked by Adams, on the rolling hills across the street from our great courts.
He defended the plan on the House floor, surrounded by his colleagues who he identified as both the descendants of slaves and slave owners. There's no design yet, but McGee's bill would direct the state to build a memorial on the Capitol grounds. McGee says the history of the state's lawmakers can't be separated from the history of the state's slaves.
In 1824, the slaves from Gadsden came here on this Capitol complex, some 200 yards away, to clear the field, to erect three log cabins to house 13 members and one governor of the First Florida Legislative Council.
And it didn't end there.
Just behind us, there were slaves in 1845 who helped construct and build the old Capitol, as we call it.
McGee said he wants to do right by a woman depicted in a mural painted on the walls of the House chambers.
A young slave woman and the things that she has gone through, with the sun that's beaming on her face, her shadows covering the steps of that Capitol, and her lips, which are sealed, while to the right of her arm are the shackles that held her down. I would attempt to give justice to her story.
The full House passed the bill forward unanimously, as it did last session. Now the measure's future is up to the Senate. Last year, it died in a committee chaired by Senator Dennis Baxley, a Lady Lake Republican. He's a descendant of a Confederate soldier and has a reputation of defending the Confederacy. But after killing the bill last year, Baxley let the measure be heard this session and even voted for it.
My concerns last year was that I really would like to focus on the people who endured slavery rather than the institution itself. And I would like to honor people rather than being about the institution. But I think they've worked through a good explanation that that is their intent and that would be the content of what's on the monument.
After passing what was a major obstacle, the bill's way forward is becoming clearer. Confederate soldiers already have a monument on the Capitol grounds. If the bill passes, the slavery memorial would join other monuments to the state's law enforcement officers, prisoners of war, Women's Hall of Fame, and Holocaust victims. The bill has one more committee stop before it heads to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Andrew Quintana and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.